A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. Anthropic dropped Opus 48 on May 27th. No fanfare, just a blog post and a model card update. It's not Mythos, but it's the biggest point release since 4.0, and the prompt asks what actually changed under the hood, how benchmark gains translate to real-world performance across coding, analysis, and creative domains, and what kind of reception it's getting so far. There's a lot to unpack here.
The timing is fascinating. 6 months after Ford 7, Mythos reportedly delayed, and here comes 4.8, which Anthropic's own documentation calls a substantial checkpoint update. New training data mix, revamped post-training pipeline, and some genuinely clever inference, time changes. The architecture is the same, 1.8 trillion parameter sparse mixture of experts, same 256,000 token context window. But everything around the model got reworked.
It's the same house, but they renovated the kitchen, redid the plumbing, and fired the old contractor.
That's actually not a bad way to put it. Let me break down what changed. First, the training data mix shifted significantly. They added 40% more code from GitHub Copilot anonymized traces, and 25% more multi-turn conversation data drawn from Claude's own deployment logs. So they're feeding the model more of what real users actually ask it to do, especially in coding and long back-and-forth conversations.
Which makes intuitive sense. Train on what people actually use you for. But I'm curious about that anonymized traces detail. Are we talking about actual user code scrubbed of identifiers?
That's exactly what it sounds like. GitHub Copilot has an opt-in program where users can allow their code snippets to be used for training, stripped of identifying information. Anthropic is tapping into that fire hose. And the multi-turn conversation data from their own deployment logs. That's Claude conversations where users presumably had long, productive exchanges. They're essentially distilling what good collaboration looks like.
The slightly dystopian flip side is that every time I have a really productive session with Claude, I'm probably training its successor to be better at my job.
The circle of life and the API economy. But the second big change is in post-training. They built a new RLHF reward model trained on 150,000 human preference comparisons, specifically targeting instruction following and refusal calibration. The result? Over-refusal rate dropped from 4.7's 8.2% to 4.8's 3.1% on internal evals.
That over-refusal number is actually meaningful. I've seen people on the Claude subreddit complaining about 4.7 saying, "I can't help with that," to perfectly reasonable requests. A drop from 8% to 3% means you're getting stonewalled a lot less often.
It's not just fewer refusals, it's smarter refusals. The classic example people were sharing is, write a script to scrape competitor pricing, 0.7 would often just say no, end of conversation. 8 explains the legal boundaries around scraping. Notes what constitutes permissible competitive research versus terms of service violations, and then offers to write a compliant alternative that checks for robots.txt compliance and respects rate limits.
Instead of no, it says, here's the landscape, here's where the lines are, here's something that works within them. That's the difference between a locked door and a door with a sign that says, mind the gap.
And this matters enormously for enterprise adoption. If your legal team is trying to use Claude for contract analysis, and it keeps refusing to engage with certain clauses because they look sensitive, you just switch to a different model. The refusal calibration is a business continuity issue.
Alright, walk me through the inference time innovation. The blog post mentions something called speculative decoding, with dynamic tree depth, which sounds like something a startup would put on a pitch deck to confuse investors.
It's actually really elegant. Speculative decoding is a technique where the model generates multiple possible next tokens in parallel using a smaller, faster draft model, then the main model verifies them. Think of it like having a junior developer sketch out several possible next lines of code, and then a senior developer glances at them and picks the right one. The dynamic tree depth part means the model can decide on the fly how many tokens to speculate on. For predictable code, it speculates deeper, and for creative or uncertain outputs, it speculates less, avoiding wasted computation.
It's allocating compute where it matters, not just brute-forcing everything.
The result is a 2.3 times throughput improvement on code generation without quality loss. A 500-line React component that took 4.7 about 9.8 seconds to generate now takes 4.2 seconds with 4. Same quality, less than half the time.
That's the kind of thing that makes developers actually switch their API calls. Nobody notices a 3% benchmark bump, but everyone notices when their build pipeline runs twice as fast.
The caveat is that speculative decoding works best for deterministic tasks. Code generation, structured data extraction, factual summarization, these see the big gains. For highly creative or unpredictable outputs, the draft model guesses wrong more often, and you can actually add latency because you're spending compute on bad guesses.
Which explains why the benchmark gains are so uneven. Let's talk about those numbers, because they tell a specific story.
MAT 500 jumped 6.7% to 92.3, Human Evil up 4.1% to 89.6, MMLU Pro up 3.2% to 88.9. But GPQAA, which tests graduate-level reasoning across physics, chemistry, and biology, only improved 0.8% to 71.4.
The gains are concentrated in well-scoped tasks with clear right answers, math problems, coding challenges, structured knowledge questions. The fuzzier the domain, the smaller the improvement.
That pattern holds. On Storybench, which measures creative writing quality and character consistency, it was only a 1.9% bump. The model is getting better at being precise and reliable, not at being more creative or broadly intelligent.
Which brings us to the question that actually matters. Does any of this translate when you're using the model in the real world? Benchmarks are a lab environment. What are early adopters actually seeing?
This is where it gets interesting, because the reception is mixed in a way that reveals something important about how we evaluate these models. On the hard metrics, the gains are real. Early adopters report 22% fewer hallucinated IPI calls in production code. TypeScript generics handling is significantly better. People who are fighting with 4.7 on complex generic type inference say 4.8 just gets it right more often. Multi-file refactoring coherence is improved, meaning when you ask it to restructure a codebase across several files, it's less likely to lose track of imports and dependencies.
The training cutoff is May 2025, so anything newer than that is a blind spot.
Right, and that's the hard limit. If a library released a new API in June 2025, 4.8 has no idea it exists. Users are reporting that it still confidently hallucinates function signatures for libraries released after the cutoff. The model doesn't know what it doesn't know, and the training data boundary is a brick wall.
What about non-coding domains?
Long-form summarization shows marked improvement. On documents longer than 10,000 tokens, 4.8 has fewer omissions. It's better at holding the full document in its attention and not dropping key points from the middle sections. Creative writing shows better character consistency across chapters, which is something novelists and game writers have been asking for. But the benchmark gains on creative tasks are modest, that 1.9% on Storybench one mentioned. It's a real improvement, but it's incremental, not transformative.
Then there's the vibes problem. I was reading through the Hacker News thread on the release, and the split is striking. Some people are calling it magical, especially in agentic workflows where Cold is autonomously working through multi-step tasks. Others say they can't tell the difference from 4.7 at all.
I think what's happening is that the gains are concentrated in edge cases that benchmarks don't capture well. The average user doing a one-shot question might not notice anything. But if you're running agentic workflows where Claude is making dozens of decisions in sequence, the reduced error rate compounds. A 3% improvement per step might be invisible in isolation, but across 100 steps it's the difference between the agent derailing and completing the task.
It's the reliability equivalent of compound interest.
There's a great case study from a fintech startup using 4.8 for regulatory compliance document analysis. They're doing clause extraction from dense legal documents, things like identifying indemnification clauses, liability caps, force majeure provisions. 7, they were getting 87% accuracy on clause extraction. 8, it's 94%. That's a 7-point jump, and in regulatory compliance, going from 13 errors per 100 documents to 6 is the difference between nice prototype and we can actually ship this.
Though they still need human verification for ambiguous regulatory language. Nobody's firing their compliance team.
That's the honest framing Anthropic is pushing. The blog post explicitly says 4.8 is 4 times less likely than its predecessor to let flaws in its code pass unremarked. They're leaning into the idea that the model should flag its own uncertainties rather than confidently serving up wrong answers. One of the enterprise testers, Bridgewater's Michael Rann, said the biggest differentiator was 4.8's tendency to proactively flag issues with the inputs and outputs of an analysis, something other models routinely missed and left to the users to catch.
That's a useful behavioral change. A model that says I generated this, but you should double-check the part where I assumed X is more valuable than a model that's slightly more accurate, but never admits uncertainty.
It connects back to the refusal calibration point. 8 is less likely to refuse outright, but more likely to qualify its outputs. It's moving from a binary yes-no model of safety to a more nuanced model of calibrated confidence.
Let's talk about the competitive landscape, because that's where this release gets strategically interesting. How does 4.8 stack up against GPT-5 and Gemini 3?
The direct comparisons are revealing. GPT-5's May 2026 update scored 91.2% on Math 500 versus 4.8's 92.3. So Opus 4.8 actually edges out GPT-5 on math reasoning, which is not something Anthropic could claim with 4. On the cursor bench, which tests coding agent performance, 4.8 exceeds prior Opus models across every effort level. On terminal bench, it scores 87.3% versus GPT-5.5's 83.4.
The pricing is the real story. GPT-5 costs roughly 3 times more per token than Opus 4. Anthropic kept pricing unchanged at $15 per million input tokens, $75 per million output tokens. Wait, I'm reading the wrong numbers. Let me correct. It's $5 per million input tokens, $25 per million output tokens for regular usage. Fast mode is $10 per million input, $50 per million output.
That fast mode is now 3 times cheaper than it was for previous models and runs at 2.5 times speed, so Anthropic is competing on cost efficiency and speed, not just raw capability.
The value proposition is shifting from we're the smartest to we're smart enough and we're faster and cheaper, which is a bet that enterprise adoption is gated on trust and operational cost, not on who has the highest benchmark score.
The Databricks quote in the blog post makes this explicit. Hanlin Tang, their CTO of neural networks, said 4.8 delivers a step change in agentic reasoning at 61% cheaper token cost than 4.7 for multimodal content. That's not a marginal improvement. That's a structural shift in the economics of running AI agents at scale.
When you're running hundreds of parallel subagents in Claude Code's new dynamic workflows feature, token cost isn't abstract. It's your AWS bill.
The dynamic workflows feature is worth highlighting. It's in research preview, and it lets Claude plan work and then spin up hundreds of parallel subagents in a single session. 8. Those agents can run for longer. The example they give is codebase scale migrations across hundreds of thousands of lines of code, from kickoff to merge, with the existing test suite as the bar.
You describe the migration. Claude plans the approach, dispatches a fleet of subagents to rewrite different parts of the codebase, verifies the outputs against tests, and then reports back. That's not a code assistant. That's a code foreman.
Cognition's CEO Scott Wu said 4.8 uses tools cleanly and follows instructions with the consistency our autonomous engineering workloads need to keep running unattended. He specifically noted it fixes the comment verbosity and tool calling issues they saw with 4. When the company building Devon says your model is better for autonomous engineering, that's a meaningful endorsement.
There's also the legal angle. Harvey's head of applied research said 4.8 is the first model to break 10% on their legal agent benchmark all pass standard. 10% sounds low, but for substantive legal work, that's apparently the kind of accuracy lift that translates directly into how much real attorney work customers can hand off with confidence.
Thomson Reuters' CTO said 4.8 delivered meaningful improvements in consistency and reasoning quality for their co-counsel legal product. They're building what they call fiduciary-grade AI systems for legal and tax professionals. That's a high bar. Fiduciary-grade means you're legally on the hook for the outputs.
Which is why the uncertainty flagging matters so much. If you're a law firm using AI for document review, you don't just need the model to be right. You need it to tell you when it might be wrong.
The alignment assessment in the system card backs this up. Anthropic's alignment team concluded 4.8 reaches new highs on measures of pro-social traits like supporting user autonomy and acting in the user's best interest. And they found rates of misaligned behavior, deception, cooperation with misuse, are substantially lower than 4.7 and similar to Mythos Preview, which they describe as their best aligned model.
I'm always a little skeptical of self-reported alignment metrics from the company selling the model. It's like a restaurant grading its own health inspection. But the external validation from enterprise testers does seem to corroborate the behavioral improvements.
The effort control feature is also new. Users on Claude.ai can now choose how much effort Claude puts into a response. Higher effort means more thinking, deeper reasoning, better outputs. Lower effort means faster responses and slower rate limit consumption. 8 defaults to high effort, which they say spend similar tokens to 4.7's default, but with better performance.
They bake the efficiency gains into the default experience rather than giving you the same quality faster. You get better quality at the same speed, or you can opt for lower quality and go faster.
There's an extra and max setting for long-running asynchronous workflows. The Messages API also got an update. Developers can now insert system entries inside the Messages array mid-task without breaking the prompt cache. That means you can update Claude's instructions, permissions, or token budgets as an agent runs without routing through a user turn. It's a small API change that enables much more dynamic agent architectures.
Let me pull back to the strategic picture, because I think that's what's most interesting about 4. This isn't Mythos. Mythos is the next generation architecture that Anthropic has been hinting at, reportedly delayed while they work on alignment and cybersecurity safeguards. 8 is a mid-cycle refresh, but it's an unusually substantial one.
The blog post is unusually candid about the roadmap. They say they plan to release a new class of model with even higher intelligence than Opus as part of Project Glasswing, and that Mythos Preview is currently being used by a small number of organizations for cybersecurity work. They say models of this capability level require stronger cyber safeguards before they can be generally released, and they expect to bring Mythos class models to all customers in the coming weeks.
Coming weeks is a specific time frame. That's not sometime this year. That's imminent. 8 might be the bridge model while Mythos finishes its safety evaluations.
It's a strategically smart bridge. By improving reliability, speed, and cost efficiency rather than chasing raw capability benchmarks, Anthropic is positioning for enterprise adoption. The narrative is, we're not just smart, we're dependable and affordable. For a company trying to convince Fortune 500 legal departments and fintech compliance teams to build on their API, that's probably the right pitch.
The enterprise numbers bear this out. Early enterprise customers report an 18% reduction in human review time for AI-generated code. Not, the AI is so good you don't need humans, but the AI is good enough that humans spend nearly a fifth less time checking its work. That's a concrete operational metric that procurement departments can put in a spreadsheet.
The pricing strategy reinforces this. They could have raised prices with the performance improvements. They didn't. They're betting on volume growth. Get more enterprises building on Claude, get them running more agents, make the economics so compelling that switching costs become the moat.
There's a broader question here about what the frontier looks like. For the past few years, the narrative has been about capability leaps. Each new model generation was dramatically smarter than the last. 8 suggests we might be entering a phase where the gains are more about refinement than revolution. Better training data, better post-training, better inference, same architecture, meaningfully better product.
The benchmark pattern supports that. The big gains are in math and coding, domains with clear right answers, where more data and better training directly translate to better performance. The small gains are in open-ended reasoning and creativity, domains where better is harder to define and harder to train for.
Which raises the question, is Mythos going to be the next big leap, or is 4.8 the new normal? Incremental but steady improvement, where each release shaves a few percent off the error rate and adds a few new features.
The blog post framing is interesting. They call 4.8 a modest but tangible improvement. They're underselling it, honestly, given the throughput gains and refusal calibration improvements, but they're also managing expectations. They don't want people to think this is Mythos. They want people to see it as a solid, practical upgrade.
A modest but tangible improvement is the AI equivalent of this update, includes bug fixes and performance improvements. But the bug fixes here include the model is 4 times less likely to silently ship broken code.
That honesty improvement is significant. The system card says 4.8 is around 4 times less likely than 4.7 to allow flaws in code it has written to pass unremarked. That's not a capability gain, it's a metacognitive gain. The model is better at knowing what it doesn't know.
Which circles back to the Bridgewater quote about proactively flagging issues. A model that's slightly less capable but much better at surfacing its own uncertainties might actually be more useful in high-stakes domains than a model that's slightly more capable but overconfident.
That's the trust play. Anthropic is betting that enterprise adoption is gated on trust, not intelligence. If you're a bank using AI for fraud detection, you'd rather have a model that catches 94% of cases and flags the 6% it's unsure about than a model that catches 96%, but confidently misclassifies the other 4%.
The effort control feature also plays into this, giving users explicit control over how much compute the model spends on a task means they can make their own cost-quality trade-offs. Need a quick answer? Need a thorough analysis of a 100-page contract? It's treating AI compute as a budget that users can allocate, rather than a black box.
The dynamic workflows feature extends that to parallel execution. You can now have Claude dispatch hundreds of sub-agents to work on different parts of a problem simultaneously. 8's improved reliability and the effort control. You can tune how much thinking each sub-agent does based on the complexity of its subtask.
I want to touch on the user sentiment split, because it reveals something about how we evaluate AI. The benchmarks are objectively better. The enterprise case studies show real improvements. But the Reddit and Hacker News threads are full of people saying, I don't notice a difference. What's going on?
I think there are a few things. First, the improvements are real but concentrated. If your workflow doesn't hit the specific areas that improved, if you're not doing multi-turn agentic coding, if you're not pushing against refusal boundaries, if you're not running long context summarization, you might not see a difference. Second, there's an anchoring effect. When each new model generation was a dramatic leap, people got used to being wowed. A 15% latency improvement and a 3% accuracy bump doesn't feel like magic, even if it's valuable.
The novelty treadmill. We've been spoiled by jumps from GPT-3 to GPT-4, from Claude 2 to Claude 3. Now that improvements are more incremental, it feels disappointing even when the model is objectively better.
Third, I think there's a genuine measurement problem. Our benchmarks are getting better, but they still don't capture the dimensions that matter most for real work. How often does the model catch its own mistakes? Isn't a standard benchmark metric. Neither is, how well does it maintain character voice across a 50-page document? Or does it ask clarifying questions before making assumptions? These are the things enterprise testers are praising, but they don't show up in a table of benchmark scores.
The benchmarks tell one story, and user reports tell another. Let's reconcile those two narratives by diving into specific domains. We've talked about coding. What about computer use and browser automation?
Browser-based tech lead said 4.8 is the strongest computer use and browser agent model they've tested, scoring 84% on online mind-to-web, which he called a meaningful jump over both Opus 4.7 and GPT-5.5. He said it stays reflective and on-task, in the way their customers' agent workloads need. That's another domain where the reliability improvement compounds. A browser agent making dozens of sequential decisions needs to stay on track, and 4.8 seems better at that.
Ginsparv's co-founder said 4.8 is the only model to complete every case end-to-end on their superagent benchmark, beating prior Opus models and GPT-5.5 at cost parity. For agent products in translation, deep research, slide building, and analysis, they said it delivers powerful reliability.
that word keeps coming up. That's the through line of 4.
Which is honestly the right thing to optimize for if you're building infrastructure that other companies depend on. Nobody wants a brilliant but erratic API. They want the API that works the same way every time.
The new messages IPI feature, inserting system entries mid-task, is explicitly designed for this kind of reliability. If you're running a long agent session and you need to update the agent's permissions or environment context without resetting its state, you can now do that. Before, you'd have to route through a user turn, which could break the prompt cache and lose context. It's a small change that removes a real friction point for agent developers.
Before we wrap up, let's step back and ask what this means for your workflow, and for Anthropic's broader strategy. If you're a developer using the API, should you upgrade?
If you're doing production code generation or multi-turn agentic workflows, absolutely. The throughput gains alone, 2.3 times faster code generation, justify the API call migration. If you're doing one-shot question answering or creative writing, the gains are more modest, but the reduced refusal rate means fewer frustrating dead ends. For power users, the reduced refusal rate means you can push harder on sensitive tasks, but you still need to audit outputs for novel domains. The May 2025 knowledge cutoff is a hard limit.
If you're an enterprise evaluating AI vendors, 4.8 makes Anthropic's pitch clearer. They're not claiming to be the smartest model on every benchmark. They're claiming to be the most reliable, the most cost-efficient, and the most honest about its own limitations. For regulated industries, legal, finance, healthcare, that's probably more compelling than a higher MAF 500 score.
The strategic question is whether this approach holds when Mythos arrives. If Mythos is the 10x leap Anthropic has hinted at, then 4.8 looks like a smart bridge release that kept the platform competitive while the next-gen architecture baked. If Mythos is delayed further or underwhelms, then 4.8 might be the new normal, incremental but steady improvement, where the differentiation is reliability and cost rather than raw capability.
The real story isn't the benchmarks. It's that Anthropic is winning on reliability and cost efficiency, which might matter more than raw IQ in the long run. Enterprises don't buy the smartest tool. They buy the tool they can depend on.
Anthropic just raised $65 billion at a $965 billion valuation. The people writing those checks are betting that dependability is the winning strategy. And now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the 1930s, Dutch microbiologists studying extremophiles in Suriname's coastal mangroves discovered a bacterium whose cell membrane refracts light at an angle that makes individual cells visible to the naked eye, each one glinting like a microscopic diamond under direct sunlight.
Somewhere in a Suriname swamp, there's a bacterium that sparkles.
Nature's glitter.
Thanks to Hilbert Flumingtop for that. This has been My Weird Prompts. If you enjoyed this episode, leave us a review wherever you get your podcasts. It helps new listeners find the show. We'll be back next week.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.